From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 16th day of November 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jerry Golke. He's at the Golke Group in Chicago, Illinois. And a bit later in the program, Drew Lerner will be here to take a look at the weather forecast. Things start to turn nasty in the next few days, and you want to stay with us all the way through the end of the program. Along the way, I'll remind you more than once likely to sign up for our Farm Assets Conference. That's coming up next Tuesday in Normal, Illinois. All the details at farmassetsconference.com. It, like this program, are a production of Illinois Public Media. Stay with us on this Wednesday afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon, the 16th day of November. Next Tuesday, I hope to see you at the Farm Assets Conference in Normal, Illinois. If you have not signed up yet, please do that right now at willag.org or farmassetsconference.com. Should be a great day. One of the people that will be in the audience will be Jerry Golke of the Golke Group out of Chicago. He's on the phone line right now from either Chicago or the DeKalb area, maybe in North Dakota. I don't know. Where are you this afternoon, Jerry?
Well, actually, I just got off the chisel plow, and I think we'll be done by tomorrow noon, perhaps, and before the first hard freeze comes. So working like a dream. It's hard to be inside when it's summer. Like, it almost smells like spring again, but now I know how the guys feel in the deep south in the fall. They get ready for planting pretty soon again.
Indeed. Anhydrous ammonia going on really quickly up in your part of the world?
Could be. We don't put as much on in the fall as as you folks talk about down there, but I won't put any on this fall. We'll put it on in the spring and either use anhydrous or urea or a combination of all three, liquid and the dry and what depends on which one is the cheapest. But right now we're not doing it this fall. I don't think we did it last year. And I did a lot of strip till, used to do it, and I've kind of gotten away from it. It's not as easy as it seems. So we wait till spring.
Okay. Now let's talk a little bit about some of the USDA numbers, in particular North Dakota. USDA tells us that in fact the numbers and the difference between that 17 bushels was because of observations of farmers that they don't actually take objective yields in that state. You've got some farmland there. Would you agree with their numbers?
Yeah, absolutely. Our farmland that family owns, that my parents owned, and now I own, and I ran out to my cousin about 40 miles north of Aberdeen, and you know, when I was a kid, you didn't even hear of soybeans up there. Well, this year, their yield was over 50 bushels an acre on the land that my dad paid $100 an acre for long, long, long time ago, you know. And so it was well above normal. I think 40, 41 is a good yield up there. Went over 50, a lot of corn, 160. And, of course, if you pull up a map and Google it and say, you know, counties where corn is planted or soybeans are planted in North Dakota, it's pretty much, 90% of it kind of falls in that Red River Valley area. And then you get some further west, and of course my son-in-law and Ashley and Matt farm up at Minot, very good soybean yields up there, and corn as well. I guess in talking to every client we have a lot of them in North Dakota and Canada and so forth, but we have not found a bad yield anywhere up there, and it keeps coming in shockingly good. I mean, some 70 bushel stuff in the Red River Valley, and so my fear is that the yield goes up again in January. The statistics are out there saying that when we have such a big crop, not just big crops get bigger, but it'll probably go up some more, and we can ill afford that. And we've kind of heard that soybean thing, you've heard it as well, all over the country, really. Very, very few spots. Maybe some in Illinois where some farmers are saying, we only got 55 bushels, none of that 70 stuff. We were too wet. Well, normally in northern Illinois, for me, 55 bushels is better than my APH, so. We were 10 to 12 bushels above it again this year.
Any reason to be concerned about the winter storm that's due to come across the northern part of the Midwest? Will it cause any problems for harvest? I know it will, but really enough of a problem to create something that happens in Chicago?
No, I kind of doubt it. I look at it this way. You know, we have about 2.2 billion bushel carryover, 2.4, maybe 2.5, depending on who you listen to. And that's about 15% of our total production. So I kind of look at it as a market, being a person looking at it and say, well, we're 90% done or 92% done. I really don't need that 8%. until I run out next summer sometime. So go ahead, Jerry, leave it in the field. It'll dry down, and they do that in North Dakota sometime. And we really don't care. We got enough in with the carry in and the production. We really don't need that extra 15% anyway. So it would be nice if it fell apart and never got harvested, but that won't happen. So I look at it another way. We've got 85 to 90, probably 92% or more, 95% of the crops safely in the bin are on the ground. Doesn't matter. You can't kill it anymore. So now we're saddled with a pretty well known supply. You know, 100 million bushels either way doesn't make a lot of difference. Like the Germans say up there, they say Mach next. Doesn't make any difference anymore. So it is what it is. Now we have to deal with it.
And what do we do now with that which we have not priced for corn?
Well, they should have listened to your analysis last summer and sold more, but there shouldn't be much left. But I think what we told our clients is that get rid of the overage and over and above your APH. A lot of people were thinking, you know, my bins are full. We put away a lot of grain in this country. You know, we have a lot of on-farm storage. Didn't see the problems evolve earlier. Now towards the end, when we're full and we're taking it to town, I personally made the decision that I don't remember ever making before, and that's if any grain that I had in open storage at the elevator, they give me 10 or 15 days to make a decision once I deliver it. I don't own a bushel of grain in commercial storage. I elected about 2 weeks ago when it got done. I said, you know, I doubt we're going to get a major rally unless we have a crop problem in South America, and that's hard to build a marketing plan on that every year. And otherwise, it'll take until June. And storage for beans was like 60 cents till June. Corn was like 36 cents. I said, I'm just not going to do it this year. So we sold it, basically what was left. And so basically, I'm 100% sold out. And that's not true for all clients. If you have on-farm storage, you can make the carry. And we've done that. We've hedged off the grain, and we're sitting here waiting now for a reason to re-own our crop, what isn't sold, what was hedged and not delivered, and I don't have one yet, even though the popular consensus was, well, hold the corn because it's cheap, sell the beans because they're expensive. I think if there's a potential out there, it's for soybeans to go higher only because of South America. But otherwise, this is not good. This is not a good picture when you look at the dollar being as high as it is, the highest it's been, I think, since 2003 or in August. And we have 700 or maybe even 800, 700 million bushel more in stock in corn than we had last year. And we have beans again, they're touting, you know, 450, 500 million like they were last year. But the difference is, last year I couldn't find anybody to agree with me that the price would go higher because of South American and the insatiable demand that we had globally. Now we have a big demand built in, 2 billion bushels for beans, as much as corn. Yet a lot of the news wires and a lot of the people on TV and so forth are talking about the demand. That we all got really good demand. Well, it's true. We have really good demand. It's already penciled in the USDA. So I'm concerned that our demand side of that supply and demand equation has waned a little. We saw that in October. We saw it again in November. And we'd better not raise the crop a little bit more in January and then find out the government tells us, well, we're going to have to push that all the way to the ending stocks because we just can't find any more strings to pull to say that we're going to use every bit that we find that's new. And I've seen markets top because of that. And that's one of the reasons why I don't think the market will earn the carry out into whatever July was, whatever the carry is back a couple weeks ago out into July. I don't think we'll get July corn back above $4 again, $4.10. And certainly not as much as $4 plus the storage for me to store it that far. That'd be $4.30. So tough situation. The good news is we got a lot of bushels times a low price. Still isn't too bad, but next year doesn't look any better.
Will some acreage go out of production or change to a crop other than corn, soybeans, or wheat?
Yeah, I looked at some numbers, assuming that we get that 4 million more acres of beans and maybe 3.5 less of corn. That's kind of the popular idea. It kind of stems from Informa. They're doing some economic stuff. I doubt very much that we lose that many acres of corn because, you know, corn is good all over. We've proven that we can grow corn, and the only way we probably and the bushels above APH seem to help the financial situation. Although I hear a lot, we have clients that are seed corn salesmen saying they've already booked corn for next year, and the general consensus is, yeah, we think there'll be more bean acres. And so I think we'll make our mind up this winter. But even with that, I come up with about a, and the yield drops to something more reasonable, like 45, 47 bushels an acre, not 52. We still come up with a carryover of 500 million bushels if South America is normal, and this will be the first time in a long, long time we've carried into the next year 500 million bushels. Something always that's happened, weather or underestimating demand, and it just makes me nervous that everybody out there is saying, well, you know, we've got good demand and demand is going to get better. I'm not so sure if we haven't dialed in the best that we could see. And in corn, you're going to lose 3 or 4 million acres of corn. That's four times 160 bushels an acre. We'll say, you know, that's only 600 or 700 million bushels. It gets us back to where we were last year. Not much chance for a big improvement over the average price for Sepak Nova that we've seen this year. Probably going to repeat that next year. And any chance to see $4 corn, I think you have to look at selling some of that. We've sold some grain for 2017 already, hedged it, no cash contracts. But there's nobody's talking about La Nina now, and that this may be the year it comes. So a person wants to have some beneficial interest some way in this crop. But what bothers me the most is that everybody's leaning the other way. Even I look back at this year, this time last year, what we watch, we don't watch necessarily the conventional CFTC stuff everybody else watches. It's a little modification of that. There was a lot of people were short then. Everybody was on the bandwagon of 750 corn, beans and corn not rallying much. And now this year we've got the specs that we look at. They're relatively positive, relatively speaking, to last year, much better. So we already got guys long this market on paper. I just don't know what it makes it go higher unless it's a big surprise somewhere. And now the dollar, you know, that's eventually got to hurt us. You know, once they get their bellies full and don't have to buy our beans anymore, then South America looks cheap.
Well, we'll let you consider what makes it go higher for about 4 or 5 days, and we'll see you next Tuesday at the hotel there at Marriott in Normal, Illinois, to talk about soybeans. Thanks so much.
Yeah, look forward to it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That is Jerry Gulke. He's of the Gulke Group out of Chicago and will be one of the folks that are on our panel of analysts next week on Tuesday. Yeah, that's the 22nd day of November for the Farm Assets Conference. You can sign up for that right now at willag.org, farmassetsconference.com. In today's agricultural news, nearly 40 senators from both sides of the aisle, including almost every member of the Senate Agriculture Committee, have signed on to a letter urging President Barack Obama to hold China's feet to the fire on its biotech approval commitments. The senators write in their letter, "When the Chinese government fails to remain transparent, science-based, and timely in its regulatory process, it impacts not only our farmers' and ranchers' ability to access critical markets in China, but also their abilities to utilize the best and most innovative agricultural technologies in our fields at home in the United States." A dialogue comes between the U.S. and China at the Joint Commission on Commerce and Trade. The letter adds, "We encourage you to continue building on the process that has been made over the last few years and urge China to move forward in deregulating products awaiting final approval, as well as to eliminate trade barriers due to regulatory systems that don't operate based on scientific assessments." On a related note, EPA is pulling some scientists from their glyphosate review, its addition and subtraction for the scientific advisory panel, tasked with reviewing EPA's evaluation of the carcinogenic potential of glyphosate. And the subtraction is intriguing. Officials have expanded the panel's membership from 13 to 17, but epidemiologist Peter Infant is no longer a member, according to the roster for the group's December meeting. Infant, a former Occupational Safety and Health Administrator official, was a target on an October 12 letter from the pesticide association Crop Life America, which claimed that his affiliation with research labs that oppose chemical agriculture makes him too biased to serve on the panel. Crop Life also took aim at Kenneth Portier, managing director of the Statistics and Evaluation Center at the American Cancer Society, but he remains on the SAP. An EPA spokesman declined to comment on the removal of Infant, calling the situation a personal matter. We'll stay with EPA for the moment and move to the renewable fuel standard for next year. It's due to be made public by the end of this month and could come as soon as this week. As part of the RFS, the EPA proposed earlier this year to set an ethanol volume target at 14.8 billion gallons. However, Growth Energy co-chair Tom Bias says the EPA needs to set the ethanol volume target at the statute level of 15 billion gallons.
I think they made a bold step last year in going up, not as much as we wanted, but it helped us crack the blend wall. And that's the key. You know, getting higher blends into the marketplace, letting consumers make that choice on what's best for their car, their pocketbook, their performance.
In the last year, he says retailers are moving towards higher blends of ethanol, highlighting the need for the EPA to set the volume target at 15 billion gallons. The final RFS for 2017 is currently under review by the White House Office of Management and Budget. Reno President-elect Donald Trump said during his campaign that he wants the Environmental Protection Agency's Waters of the U.S. rule gone, but it won't likely be gone on day one of his presidency. But can he end BOTUS? Well, American Farm Bureau Senior Counsel for Public Policy Daniel Quist says he can only start the process.
With under Trump administration, EPA and the Corps of Engineers can go through the formal process to withdraw or rescind the WOTUS rule. But they would have to go through the same public notice and comment and then formal agency action as they did before. And that would in turn be challenged by groups who disagree with that decision, and we'd be right back in court.
Federal courts have put the Obama EPA rule on hold, but that doesn't get rid of the vast expansion of federal water jurisdiction if the stay is lifted. But Quist says with Trump in the White House, a GOP-led Congress will now have a better shot to end WOTUS.
There's a fresh opportunity for Congress to put to an end to this rule once and for all, but this time with the full support of the president. And that would save farmers, ranchers, the public, states, and everybody in the regulated community a lot of time and expense of overturning a rule in court.
However, Quist adds, there are Obama actions that Trump can reverse immediately, including one to require agency mitigation planning before approving projects.
That is an executive order. It comes from the power of the president and a new administration. We hope we'll take a look at that and rescind the directions that were given to federal agencies.
Those include the Department of Agriculture, Interior, and Defense. Let's talk really quickly about what's been happening in the cash grain market. Stephen Linneber is here now. He's from the Clymers ethanol facility that belongs to the Andersons outside of Logansport, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Stephen.
Hi, Todd.
Tell me about final crop in your area. And I'm looking at really interest kind of in the yields to the east of you and to that northeastern area of Ohio. I know your draw is probably not quite that far, but you're a lot closer than we are. How off were their yields?
I would say a fair number would be probably 10 to 12 bushel to the acre. For the most part, everything drifted off a little negatively the deeper they got into it. But was probably offset all the while by the fact that had little additional toxins starting to show up in that corn, and trying to find a home for that makes it even more of a challenge when you're producing less bushels. And on top of that, you're subject to rejection at a lot of processors, especially from a DDG output source.
So vomitoxin becomes a problem even in the ethanol development
side. Right, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, most of the time for us, we classify that to be you pretty much triple the parts per million once that's into DDGs. So therefore, looking at it from a perspective of 3.0 turns the 9.0 in a quick hurry, and that's kind of unacceptable from a feed and residual side of things.
And very quickly, your bids for the day.
We are option price the December, which puts us $3.38 cash corn at the close, and beans right around $9.58 at Delphi.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it, Stephen.
All right. Thank you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Do visit our website, willag.org. Get yourself signed up for the Farm Assets Conference. That's next Tuesday in Normal, Illinois. Should be a great day. You can find all the details at farmassetsconference.com and a link on that or willag.org to purchase your tickets. Now we're joined by Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hey, Drew, thanks for being with us today.
Good afternoon. Indeed, a beautiful day out there, I guess.
It is a gorgeous day here in the Midwest. However, I'm wondering whether things will turn a little nastier in the future.
Well, you know, it's that time of the year. It's been this time of the year for a while, and we continue to get treated well with spring-like conditions, seems like. But, you know, we're going to see a fairly significant frontal boundary move across the Midwest here this weekend, and that will take the carpet out from underneath us, I guess, and we'll likely see a lot of wind and some cold air blowing at our faces, and we're going to kind of shudder at the thought that maybe winter is really here. But it probably won't last too terribly long. The cold is going to be primarily the weekend itself, and we'll probably see those temperatures rebound again fairly quickly next week back to an above-average range. So it's a quick cold slap in the face, and that's going to be about it. Now, if you're in the upper parts of the Midwest, it's a little bit different story. We're going to see a little bit of a winter storm. In fact, it's not just a little bit of one. A raging blizzard will occur this Friday across the upper Midwest from the eastern Dakotas into parts of northern and central Minnesota, and we'll probably see some 3 to 9 inch snow accumulations and local totals getting up over 10 inches across northern Minnesota in particular, and we'll see a lot of wind blowing, and that wind will work its way all the way down into the heart of the Midwest. It'll be a northwesterly wind, and there'll be a bit of the wind chill around. The temperatures in the northern parts of the Midwest will fall back into the 30s and 40s for afternoon highs during the heart of the weekend, and the southern areas will probably be in the 40s and 50s. But that was a quick 1 or 2 days of that. Lows at night will certainly fall back into teens and 20s in the north and 20s in the south. So we'll, like I said, get a taste of winter, but right after that we will turn right around and warm ourselves back into 50s and maybe some 60s next week. So not much precipitation. There'll be a line of thunderstorms from Missouri to Michigan and Ohio, and they'll produce maybe a tenth to three-quarters of an inch of rain and last about 2 hours, and that's going to be it. We'll be back into the dry again.
A quick look at South America for me, please.
Looks like most of Brazil will continue to see a lot of rain in the north half of the production region as we go forward through the next 10 days. Maybe some local flooding eventually. The ground is becoming saturated. Southern areas are drying down. The interior south will probably go about a week and a half without much precipitation. Now, they've been wet, so the drying is going to be beneficial initially, but if it lasts into early December, that will change. So we'll watch real closely. And Argentina is doing much better with a lot less frequent and less significant rains, and the crops are looking fairly good there.
Hey, thanks, Drew, for all the information.
All right. Have yourself a good day.
Drew Lerner, of course, is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, joins us on this Wednesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Listen to him again online at willag.org. There you'll also find a way to register for our Farm Assets Conference. It's just a few days away, next Tuesday in Normal, Illinois. The cost only $30, and if you're a farmer, you're reimbursed for that.